call this internal affairs meeting order. Today is Wednesday, December 17th, 2013. And our first item on the agenda is a presentation by Ms. Amy Baker with the Office of Economic Demographic Research. And she is a coordinator of that department. And I guess we probably want to know a little bit about Amy, right? So let's say a couple things about Amy. Amy has been with state government since 1986. And she has served with both the executive and legislative branches. She is the state's chief economist, from my perspective, and she provides excellent information to the legislature. And in essence, all of our budgets in our state are based upon her predictions. So, so with that, Amy, we thank you for being with us here today. So that we can be in tune as an agency as to, you know, the broader view economically in our state. So with that, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. We're going to run through a number of things. I'm going to try to focus on the things that I think you're most interested in and go a little bit faster over the others. But if you have any questions, feel free to interrupt us. The only reason we put this slide in the presentation is just to give you kind of a table of contents of why we focus on what we focus on. So we have to concentrate on global and national economic conditions because they spill over into Florida. Population growth is still real important to us, and tourism, employment growth, and then construction. So those are pretty much the major drivers in what we have to talk about. So in that light, the first slide that we have in the presentation is talking about gross domestic product for Florida. That's a measure of all the goods and services being presented into the state. During the Great Recession, we had actually gone negative for 2 years in a row, but we've now, through 2012, had three positive years. So this is a measure that's coming back and strengthening for us. When we concluded the 2012 year, we were just below the national average at 2.5%. So we were doing much better, but not quite back to where we wanted to be. We also focused on personal income. The biggest part of personal income is wages and salaries. And the reason we focus on this one is because we get this data once a quarter. So it's more a real-time indication of how we're doing. We had a lot of disruption in this data set as we moved out of the last quarter of 2012 and into the first quarter of 2013. We now have data through quarter two, and it's looking very positive. We're in the strongest growth bracket, so that's good news for personal income. But we really need another quarter to kind of see how things will shake out. We had people who thought that they were going to see tax increases coming out of the 2012 fiscal cliff, and they were responding to it. So that really moved our data around quite a bit. But we're definitely in the strongest bracket, so that's the good news. In terms of employment conditions, Florida is the blue line in both of these graphs, and in the United States is the red line. Florida has actually, on the top graph, which is showing the growth in non-farm jobs, has usually outperformed the nation as a whole, and did so all the way until we started seeing the housing market correction. And that's when you see that blue line fall below the U.S. line. Most recently, about the last 2 years, we've kind of been tracking the United States as a whole in terms of job creation. And in the most recent months, we've actually gone a little bit ahead of the U.S. as a whole. So October, which is the last month we had, we were at 2.5% growth in jobs. The U.S. was at 1.7%. So we're doing much better. We're still, in terms of total jobs, well away from the peak. We're still almost 450,000 jobs below where we were in the peak in Florida, but we're certainly starting to pick up. The unemployment rate is the bottom chart, And with the same story there, except of course flipped, we had a lower unemployment rate than the nation as a whole for a lot of our history. We did surge above the U.S. during the Great Recession. Recently, we've come back together. So right now, we're tracking the U.S. pretty well, and we'd expect that to kind of continue for a little while. The U.S. in October had a 7.3% unemployment rate. Florida had a 6.7%. And we still had about 625,000 people in Florida that were unemployed. A not insignificant number of them were long-term unemployed. So that's kind of an emerging issue for us. But you can see how much better that is at our peak, our worst unemployment rate. We were there for several months, December 2009 through March 2010. We were at 11.4%. So 6.7% is showing definite improvement.
Quick question for you. What caused for that huge drop? If you look right there where we cross over the U.S. line in January 2013.
In the unemployment rate?
Yes.
It really has a lot to do with this story. Now, this story's not unique to Florida, but we certainly start seeing some of these effects a little bit earlier than the U.S. as a whole. What we know is because the Great Recession lasted for such a long period of time and the recovery coming out of it was so slow that relative to past recessions, we ended up with a huge number of folks that were long-term unemployed that ultimately ran out of all the benefits that they had available to them and just sat out of the labor force. They to be counted as unemployed or a part of the active labor force, you have to be actively pursuing a job. And so we had people who felt like the conditions were so bad they just weren't even going to bother. We also had a lot of young people in Florida who never launched into the job market. They just went to college or not, and just kind of sat around and didn't really look for a job. Probably for similar reasons, they didn't feel like opportunities were there for them at that point. But that labor force participation rate in Florida declined relative to what we've seen in the past, and it is still at very low levels. So if we look back, and the date is arbitrary, except that's when we first started seeing some shifting. If we look back to December 2011, and we said, had Florida kept that same labor force participation rate from that point to this point, what would the unemployment rate be? And that's a way to let us evaluate how much of the improvement we're seeing is actually coming from people that are still sitting on the sidelines of the labor market. They're not looking for jobs, and they're not moving in. As things continue to get better, we would expect that to shift. And so at some point, you'll see kind of a group of people move back into looking for jobs, and that'll affect these numbers, including our participation rate, which right now is pretty well below what our 25-year average was. So we think, when you go back to this chart, the top chart, which is job growth, you can see we're kind of, it's positive, but it's kind of flat. It's not showing major shifts. But the unemployment rate did, just as you said, it dived. So we think about 60% of that downward turn in the unemployment rate, where it's coming down so quickly, it has a lot to do with people still sitting out of the labor market. So that's something we're watching. When people get convinced that things are better, they'll start coming back in, start actively looking for jobs, and we'll see all kinds of things start happening at that point. But we're not quite there yet. There probably are people moving back in, but not enough to move any of these statistics. So the bottom line is we're still about 450,000 jobs below where we were at our peak, but for us in Florida, because the time frame has been so long since the peak, you have to also take into account population growth. And if to get the same number of people, the same percentage working, as was the case in our last peak, you have to create not 450,000 jobs, but about 850,000 jobs to account for that population growth. So we still have a couple years to get back to those peak levels, however you measure it, where you feel comfortable that we put all of this behind us and we're going forward. And this chart kind of shows you the breakout around the state. The yellow areas are the areas that have returned to their peak and are growing from there. So those are the strongest areas of the state right now. Central Florida's got a pocket, Northwest Florida's got a pocket, and then over just below Jacksonville, we've got kind of a pocket where things have returned to normal and are growing beyond that. The dark green areas are the areas that have the furthest to go to get back to where they were at their peak. And then wage gap, we're not going to spend any time on this. Florida, because of the makeup of our industries, we're so heavily retail-oriented and accommodations and leisure-oriented. Those tend to be low-wage jobs. Our average annual wage for the state as a whole kind of normally is a little bit below the U.S. as a whole in terms of wage growth and where we are, and we're still seeing that. In fact, it drifted downwards just a little bit more in 2012. We were about 87%, almost 88% of the national average annual wage. So that's pretty much a normal story. Now, one of the things you care a lot about in your work is population growth. We've got a couple of things going on here. I mean, whether you agree with it or not, population growth is still the primary driver of Florida's economy. That's why we grow, is because we're bringing people in from other areas. When we, 1970 to 1995, which was kind of our heyday of growth, our population growth percentage was over 3% a year. That was fairly normal, fairly typical for us. During the Great Recession, we never went negative, but we did fall to just very close to zero. We've been coming back from there. Now we're about 1%, 1.1%, continuing to strengthen over the next few years. So we expect about 1.3% growth between 2013 and 2015 per year. So that's pretty good growth, pretty strong growth. We think we're going to normalize or reach a new steady state of around 1.4%, so about half of what we used to see. We think that's the new level. Now, there's two things to note about that. Compared to other states, compared to the country as a whole, that is still really strong growth. It's a low percentage, but its meaning is very strong. The U.S. as a whole during that period is not even going to hit 1% growth. It will be about 0.75% growth. So we're going to still continue to get more than our fair share of population shifts as we move forward to 2030. The state that we are most in competition with right at this moment for kind of a milestone event is New York. Currently, New York is the third largest state in the country in terms of population. We expect to take over that ranking sometime within the next 2 years. So Florida, New York is actually just starting to turn negative. They've been really close to zero growth. But we're continuing to grow, so we'll overtake them. And we'll go past the 20 million mark. This kind of just shows you the kind of shape of what we see going forward. By 2030, we think we're going to be at 23.6 million people. Right now, we're about 19.3 million people.
Let me ask you a question on the population that's migrating in. Do we have any sense of who those people are?
We do. Let me skip to this chart. This this vote between now, or actually 2010 and 2030, we expect just under 5 million people to move into Florida. And of those 5 million people that will be moving into Florida, about 56.9%, 57% of them are actually going to be seniors. They're going to be age 60 and older. So almost all of our growth is going to be in the retiree bracket in terms of migration from other states. There will be some among the younger ages. You can see we've got birth still pretty strong. 0 to 17 is going to account for about 13.8% of our gains in that period. The kind of middle ages, where we think about people being at their highest earning potentials, these are like managers, senior researchers, kind of that upper bracket of people. When you think of their career as a range, this is where people are in their prime earning years. Virtually no activity in that group. So you see we have a very U-shaped pattern to what we expect to be our population growth. Now, in terms of services, not necessarily your services, but all government services, where the two ends of the U are where you have your higher costs. And so that's what we will be getting in. Where you have your least demand on services is that group where 40 to 59, where we're not going to be getting so many folks. So it's really going to start tilting what we expect to see. Part of this is very much related to the baby boomers and their retirement. They're such a large cohort that they're going to be dominating everything. All the surveys we've seen, Florida, if not number one, is number two or number three as people's choice of where they would like to retire.
Don't you want that also impact the general service industry, not just necessarily the governmental, but private services?
Yes, absolutely. Now, healthcare is going to be the big driver. The one thing to think about in terms of the baby boomers moving to Florida, between now and probably 2020, they're baby boomers that are healthy, that are at the very early edge of their retirement. They have the greatest number of assets that they will have to move to Florida. They're typically selling a house somewhere else and bringing those dollars to Florida. Because they're healthy, they don't have great demands. They don't have children. They don't have great demands. So the first couple years of the baby boomers kind of shifting to Florida will actually be very good for Florida's economy because they're going to be coming, they're healthy, low demand for services, and their greatest level of assets. By the time you hit 2020, that first group is going to be starting to age. And so they're going to then start having greater and greater demands on health care, on specialized services, things, street signs, public transportation, things like that. They're going to have more need to rely on government services. But you still got the late baby boomers coming in. So we call 2020 to 2030 about a transition period. By the time the Florida hits 2030 through about 2050 will be our greatest problems. So we may actually see a surge in revenues between now and 2020, kind of a flattening between 2020, 2030, and then by 2030 there will be a big demand on government services coming from the baby boomers. So they're not homogenous through their whole retirement. It's really at least two different groups of behaviors that we'll be dealing with during that period. The only thing I was going to mention here is this is showing you that population growth by increment. And the thing that everyone has heard for years that's lived in Florida is how we have population growth of 1,000 people per day. We're not anticipating getting back to that level. We're looking at our peak about 770 people per day. So we probably will not see those years again. That's the equivalent of adding about the city of the size of Orlando or St. Petersburg or Hialeah, depending on which period you're looking at, every year to Florida's population. We were adding a city the size of Miami every year. So still real strong growth, but just not quite as frenetic as it was. In terms of housing, I'm going to go a little bit more quickly on this. We are seeing good, solid improvement and big numbers in terms of percentage growth. But when you put it in perspective, we still have a long ways to go. So this particular chart is showing you per capita building permits, which is new construction, residential construction. And when we look at this number, we were seeing growth of 32.4% in 2012. We're on track to beat that this year, somewhere around maybe 37%, 36%. But you see historically where that puts us, we're still way below that red line, which is our long-term average. So some of the growth rates you're going to be hearing about in the papers or hearing discussed are a little bit misleading. The growth rates are what they are, but we have a long ways to go to get back to where we think is normal. This chart looks at by county where their peak was, and we use a whole period in this case because each county peaked at a different point, and says where they are at the end of 2012 and building permit activity to where they were then. The main thing to notice about this, the strongest counties, everybody's still below where they were at that point, their peak, but the strongest counties, again, are in yellow, and there's a very close linkage to how they looked on their employment to the peak. So construction is very much a driver of some of the returning to normal that we think about. Existing home sales are increasing. They're doing steadily well. We're, you know, teetering very close to being back where we were in the 2005 peak year. So they're doing well. Prices are not nearly as strong. They're starting to definitely show an upward movement and show strong improvement, but they're not anywhere near back to where they were at their peak. At their peak, the median sales price for Florida's for a home was $257,800 in October, which was the most recent data. We were at $169,000. So we're still 34.4% away from where we were in Florida at our peak. And even though we typically were behind the U.S. median price, we're more below it than we should be. So we're about 15.3% below the U.S. median price, and so we've still got a lot of room to gain. We're not improving quite as fast as the U.S. as a whole. This is just showing you job stamp. Same story. This is a revenue source that tracks the real estate market very closely, and you can see we've had 3 years of growth through 2012, and we're going to post another year of growth in 2013. But we're a good ways off from where we were at the peak. I'm not sure in this case that we will get back to that peak for a really long time. That was very unusual. Foreclosures are still very much a story in Florida. We've seen some slowdown in the filing of foreclosures, but the pipeline is still there. So we're waiting for those foreclosures to get filed, to work all the way through the process, and then to hit the market. They, to a large extent, most of them haven't yet hit the marketplace. They're still bogged down in the process. This is the main reason why. The foreclosure process before we got into the Great Recession was about 169 days from start to finish, which is about 6 months. Right now, at this moment, our process in Florida is 929 days, which is about 2.6 years to get through the foreclosure process. So we've got just a big bubble sitting there that hasn't really broken loose yet. And this shows you another look at it. This is bringing in the delinquent or seriously delinquent homes. The good news here is that the front end of that pipeline moving into a foreclosure is really slowed down. We are not adding very many people to being seriously delinquent. So that's pretty much shut down. We just have the bubble sitting there waiting to get through the foreclosure process. We have seen a lot of improvement over, at our worst, about 50% of all of our residential mortgages in Florida were underwater. In the most recent data, we're down to about 20% being underwater. And that has a lot to do with a couple of federal programs that were offered that Florida really benefited from in terms of reworking those mortgages. Sales mix is still putting downward pressure on that sales price for homes. For a long time, we were seeing huge percentage of the sales each month being cash sales, which matters to you all from the standpoint those weren't people buying homes to move into them and establish a home. Those were people investing. And some of them then put their homes up for rent. Others didn't at all. So as we see, and the finance percentage was very low. The typical way to buy a home in the U.S. is through financing. It had dropped very low. But it is starting to come back up. We're starting to get a more normal mix, but it's nowhere back to where what we used to see as being the right mix between financing, cash, and distress sales. So everything's still pretty elevated on to the downside in here. Home ownership rate is actually back to normal. When we started going through the housing boom in Florida, we had at that point been in a long run average of about 66.3% home ownership rate. We traveled in a very narrow band. You remember one of the causes of the housing boom in Florida is that financing was so easy to get that our home ownership rate shot up to a level we had never seen. It got up to 72.4%. And we predicted at the time that that probably wouldn't be sustainable and that given enough time to work out, it would come back to a more normal long-run average. And in fact, we see that now, and when we get the final 2013 number, we should be maybe even a tiny bit below that long-run average. But we're definitely back to that level. So what we found as economists, for years, we believed that home ownership was an excellent thing for everyone. That if you could own a home, it was a terrific benefit, a terrific asset, a good way for you to build savings. But what we found is that there are so many costs associated with home ownership, everything from property taxes to insurance costs, maintenance costs, that there's a large number of folks that is too stressful to bear that ongoing cost on an annual basis. And so we think there is a steady state now of people who can afford home ownership, and that beyond that, it may not be the best solution for everyone. Rentals may be a good solution, particularly for young people starting out. In terms of credit conditions, we're starting to get seriously mixed messages on this. We had tightened very much all the way through the Great Recession to where it was almost impossible to get a mortgage. It is eased from that point, but we had expected that remain basically on change line to weaken as it's done, but that all the weakening would fall to the easing side. And what we're seeing in the most recent data is we're starting to pop up a little bit on the tightening side. So we're still not back to where credit is normal for mortgages. So we've got a little ways to go on that. In terms of consumer perceptions, we had been improving overall back to our long-run rate. We reached it this summer of what we thought is a kind of a normal consumer perception level. We have dropped since that point this summer. A lot of it had to do with all the uncertainty in Washington, what was going to happen with the resolution of the fiscal cliff and being able to do some long-term debt solution. The data in November was about 75.1 as an index reading, which is below normal. Our normal is about 85.1 when things are not being influenced one way or another. Hopefully the recent budget agreement will kind of ease things a little bit and we'll start coming back up. We spend a lot of time worrying about declines in consumer perception because it's so closely tied to sales tax, which is one of our most important revenue sources for the state. So the bottom line is the economy is definitely recovering. We're well underway. We probably have at least another couple of years to go before we can say everything is pretty much back to normal. So we're pegging it at the very beginning of fiscal year 2016-17 right now. The big drivers for Florida are going to be the still low home prices that should help attract buyers, the long-run sustainable demand caused by continuing population growth and household formation that's been pent up, and then our unique demographics with the baby boomers. Just a word about household formation. What we saw during the Great Recession is more than we have ever seen. People moved in together. So you saw sibling groups move in together, people get roommates, many, many, many children move back with their parents where they still are. So one sign of things getting better is when those unusual household formations start breaking up. So as anyone who's got children living at home with them, as you push them out of the house and they buy, start up their own household, that will be a sign that things are getting back to normal. Whether they rent or buy, it's just that household formation piece. So we expect that to happen. We really haven't seen it to any large degree yet, but we'd expect it over the next 2 years. And then, unusually for us, we've always talked about the downside risk for our economic forecast. Right now we do have an upside risk, which is we have so many homes that have been vacant for so long since the housing correction started that they've reached the point that they're so deteriorated that they're not really viable for someone to buy and move in. They're not move-in ready. And so the decision is, in some of those worst cases, to raise a house and start a new house, or just get a new lot and start new construction on it. So what we've seen is that bifurcated the marketplace to where you have a large part of our inventory that's move-in ready, people could move. Another part of the inventory that's going to take a while before it's going to be used again. And so that has actually kind of opened up a hole or a gap for new construction that come back faster than we thought it would start. That is very good for the economy. We get much larger multipliers and economic activity coming from new construction than we do from existing home sales, which are more just churning. So that's an upside. In terms of the fiscal cliff, this is our biggest risk. Good news coming on the sequester front. There is a bipartisan budget agreement that eases things a little bit over the next 2 years at a cost to greater cuts later on, but takes out some of the worst effects in the immediate 2 years. That agreement's been passed by the House. It is getting ready to be passed by the Senate probably tomorrow. They took a closure vote this morning, and it passed. So we expect that agreement to go all the way through. Still ahead of us, fairly quickly, is going to be what to do about the debt ceiling. So we don't know what will happen with that. We were a little bit conservative, I would say, on especially our economic forecast when we met in the earlier part of this month, because we were worried about what these two events would do. So that it is positive that things are right now unfolding smoothly, and if they can figure out a resolution to the debt ceiling without the economy being affected, that would be a very good news for our forecast and good news for what we see going forward. And this is just a snapshot of our latest general revenue forecast. We did just meet on it a couple of weeks ago. We did add a very little bit of money. I don't want to belittle the value of $225 million, but in terms of a overall forecast that's approaching $28 billion, that's a very minor change in our world. It's more tinkering. The good news is it was tinkering to the positive side, so we were adding a little bit of money. And like I said, if we can figure out the whole debt ceiling issue calmly, then that'll be good news for what we do when we meet again, which will be in March.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Baker, so much. Commissioners, any questions? And Commissioner Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Baker, I appreciate this stuff. I love looking at graphs and this kind of stuff. I guess it appeals to the geek in me. A couple questions I have. When you start dealing with the snowbirds that come in and out of the state all the time, how are they counted? Or are they counted? Or where do they register to vote? Where the car, where the driver's license is? How do you do that?
The Census Bureau definition is if you're in a state for more than 6 months, that's the state that counts as your primary residence. So roughly, we follow that. And I say roughly because there are some reasons that people would like to deem Florida their home, like a homestead exemption would be a very big one.
State income tax.
Yeah. So we probably have a boost of people, snowbirds, declaring Florida their home that's not, you know, not present in other states. But mostly the idea is where do you spend the bulk of your time?
No, I take it the growth numbers you have are all net growth numbers. Mm-hmm. I hear people all the time, they talk about how people are living longer now. I take it you guys are looking at that as well, and that's part of the later on impact that we're seeing between 2013 and 2030?
Yeah.
Because the expected life is, what is it now, the expected life? Do you know that?
What we have embedded in our forecast is where we are right now, which is, you know, just around 80. But that is going to continue to grow, as we go forward between now and 2030. So one of the things we've been spending a lot of time about is baby boomers, in terms of the length of their retirement, probably will face a greater retirement period than any generation before them. So if you retire at 67, and let's say by 2030 you're, you know, 90, 91 as in terms of average life expectancy, most people are not going to be prepared to have the assets to last all the way through that length of time. So we've been focusing on that a lot in terms of what that's going to mean for government services and how to deal with those issues. Some of the folks that are going to be in a situation where they don't have enough assets to last that whole period of time are folks where we don't typically have safety net programs for them. For an example, divorced women, a lot of them didn't necessarily think about retirement when they put together their settlement agreements. And so they're going to hit retirement, a lot of them having sat out of the workforce for a period of time, not having backfilled that through their divorce decree, and so they're going to be in retirement with not, you know, with definitely not enough assets to carry them through that whole retirement period, or they're going to be much more reliant on Social Security than most people are. Most people have something else in addition to that. So they're going to be running out of assets earlier, but that's not a group we have typically thought of as a need to put safety net programs behind. So all of these issues are going to be new to us, and we're going to be wrestling with them for the first time with that baby boomer population.
Thank you. Commissioner Bell. Thank you, Ms. Baker. Thank you for your presentation. A quick question. One of the things that we look at along with utilities are load forecasts, and we recently had a case where those projections were a little bit off. You have very specific information. Do you share that with the utilities? Do you work with them on providing this information?
There have been a few utilities that have called us or that we're aware watch our different estimating conferences, particularly the demographic. But as a general rule, we have no formal interaction with them or formal relationships with them where we share information. Now, we try, I've been at EDR for 10 years, and we try very hard to post everything we do online, all the data we have. And we, in fact, are in the process right now of renegotiating our contract of Beaver, which supports us in our demographic work, to include a lot more information that we would also be posting online. So I think that the data is readily available. I can't swear how much people are availing themselves of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Brown, did you have anything?
No, excellent presentation. Very thorough. Thank you.
All right. Kurt, you had a question.
I was just going to add on Amy ever since she started. And she was working in the legislature, in the Senate, way back in the early 80s. And when I was affiliated with the Collins Institute, David Denslow was on our board, and he's been functioning as a state economist for quite a while. And one of the things that, when you look at those numbers, Commissioner Grant, particularly on the 80-year-olds up, it's dramatic. The over 85 is a separate age group thing called the frail elderly, and we will have and have the highest percentage of those people in the country. We're going to continue to have the largest group of over 85 age group. And when she talks about, you know, the safety net, the commission I chaired on the nursing home stuff back in 1996-97, we focused a lot on those frail elderly and the numbers and the kind of services they would need. And what we're also finding is that when a lot of them, like she mentioned, when they get to the end of their resources they had because they didn't plan to live that long, a lot of them go back north, go back to their kids. There's quite a number of them that will end up going back home when they're up into their 80s. So that relieves some of the pressure, but nonetheless, it's still a pretty terrific kind of plan for that amount of your population to be that old, because it runs through everything, grocery shopping, taxi cabs, transportation issues, trying to meet that group. And likewise, as more stuff happens, we're going to need more things in the home, more issues. So the good news is that Florida is growing. You just wish that people would pay attention to these presentations and pay attention to history, because it was so obvious back in 2005, and particularly 2006, that the building boom was out of control. It was just out of control, and you talk about the people that are in bankruptcy. So many people were buying beyond their means because the credit got too easy for them, and they got into trouble. And it was so obvious that the developers had so much inventory. I mean, ordinarily, if you have 6 months of inventory of empty buildings, you can handle that. But they were getting up to 2.5 years of inventory, and that's one of the reasons why the recovery in Florida takes longer, because you've got to use up part of that inventory before you can get new construction. And so a lot of that, they kind of paid attention that the credit was out of control. It had to be wraps have been put on that. I just hope we don't go down that same path again because it was the same result.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Bias?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And something along the lines of what Commissioner Valdez had asked, you had a slide that represented how which counties were closer to their peak in terms of construction permits. How closely does that slide or does that data correlate to where you might be projecting growth, fastest population growth, where your new population centers are going to sprout up? Is there any connection to that, or do you all get into that sort of forecasting at all?
It's very close. All of our large urban areas that we've had are going to continue to grow. None of them are showing any weakness. So for that reason, where we're seeing the most improvement is where you're posting your largest numbers. We have two new areas that we haven't really thought about as high growth areas, but they're starting to solidify. One is the Villages. Villages, pretty much in terms of growth rates, population growth rates, everything else we're looking at is posting big numbers. So it's continuing to grow. That's, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that wouldn't even have been a growth area for us that ranked in our top areas, but now it does. The other area that's really starting to show up over and over is Northwest Florida. That's been kind of a steady area. It's had growth, but it hasn't had that large spiking growth, and we're starting to see very strong growth come in that area. So I would say pretty much it's our normal culprits, Orange, Hillsboro, Miami-Dade, Broward, Duval. Osceola is orange, kind of spilling into Osceola. So we've added counties but kept those, and then the two new areas is what we're seeing in terms of the most growth activity right now.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for your presentation. Very thorough. Reminds me of my days at the legislature. But always excellent. And I think these type of presentations are important for us to get a broader perspective of what's going on within the state as entities come before us. And so if we have that in mind, it helps guide our thinking a little bit. So thank you very much once again. Okay, moving on with our agenda, moving on to number two, looking at comments for FERC. Again.
Cindy Miller with the Office of General Counsel, with Mayor Philip Ellis of the Engineering Department, and Ben Crawford of the Office of Industry Development and Market Analysis. We are recommending that the Commission file comments in the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission dockets on the Florida Utilities second round Order 1000 compliance filings. These are part of the ongoing efforts of the industry's compliance with that order. As you may recall, the utilities have already submitted one round of compliance filings. However, the FERC directed the utilities to make a number of revisions. One of those areas for revision related to the utilities' express references to the Florida Transmission Line Siting Act. The FERC stated that the actual criteria from the act might be approved if they are justified, but told them not to refer generally to the Transmission Line Siting Act. The Florida Commission filed a request for rehearing, but the FERC has not ruled yet on that. One of the issues raised by the Commission related to this requirement. The utilities have incorporated the separate criteria, such as must cross county lines, from the Act in their newest filing. We've seen a draft of it, and it's due today. We are recommending the Commission file comments which oppose the use of any criteria differing from the Transmission Line Siting Act criteria, and continue to state the Commission's preference that the Act itself be referred to instead of separating out the criteria. If you vote to approve this item, we will draft and file comments within the parameters listed in the memo.
All right, thank you. Commissioners, comments, questions? Mr. Edgar.
Thank you. I wanted an opportunity to meet with our staff and discuss this in further detail, and I think we're absolutely on the right track and need to go in this direction. I recognize we discussed that the comments that we would be commenting on had not finally been submitted as of yesterday afternoon. Is that still the case?
As far as we know. I know that we have Greg Ramone from Tampa.
And that was going to be my next. It would be all right.
Sure, perfectly fine.
Ask if there is somebody from the same companies who could speak from your perspective.
You're welcome to join the table.
All right.
And my understanding is that you're speaking on behalf of
the floor.
All right, thank you.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Greg Ramon. I'm the Director of Regulatory Policy and Compliance for Tampa Electric, and I'm appearing before you today on behalf of the Florida sponsors. And to remind you, it's five utilities, three public utilities, three non-public transmission providers, the three IOUs, JEA, and Orlando Utilities. And first and foremost, we want to commend staff for their efforts. The Order 1000 compliance process has been long and complex and will continue to be, and the staff has been very engaged. The Florida sponsors unquestionably support the principles listed in the staff memo that would form the basis for your comments regarding the need to maintain the viability of using the TSA as threshold criteria for the the Order 1000 type projects. And in our findings, we have coined a term from FERC, cost-effective and or efficient transmission solution, or CERS. It's not a breath mint. the minimum threshold criteria, as Cindy mentioned, is not specified and justified, we believe, in our filing today, and it largely consists of the existing TSA criteria, which we believe will increase the likelihood that the FRCC regional planning process will identify projects that would be built and therefore will support the goals of Order 1000. By largely adopting the TSA criteria, the Florida sponsors have aligned the regional planning process with the regulatory review and approval performed by this commission in its need determinations, as well as the one-stop siting process overseen by the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. And I want to thank you again, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to address you. And unless you have any further questions, this concludes the major comments that the Florida sponsors wanted to make this morning in support of the principals and the staff memo.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Any questions or comments, Commissioners? Commissioner Bowles.
I just wanted to thank staff. I think I agree with the proposed comments and support authorizing staff to submit them. I think we just need to continue to watch and make sure that Florida's interests are protected.
Okay. Any additional comments? Okay, then I think we're ready to entertain some sort of motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that staff be directed to finalize comments per the principles that are here and coordinate filing them through the chairman's office.
Second. It has been moved and seconded. All right. Any additional comments? All right. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All right. Great. Moving on to the next item, dealing with the FCC.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Bob Casey on behalf of staff. Item number three addresses staff's draft comments on an FCC proposal to create an address confidentiality program for Lifeline customers. Address confidentiality programs protect victims of domestic violence by allowing them to use a substitute mailing address through the Florida Attorney General's office rather than their physical home address. Staff's draft comments encourage the FCC to consider the following. The FCC should waive the rule limiting the use of P.O. Box residential addresses. Number two, eligible telecommunications carriers should accept a Florida Address Confidentiality Program authorization card as proof of program enrollment. And number three, the FCC should waive the requirement for Address Confidentiality Program participants to fill out a one per household worksheet. The staff is available for comment.
Questions? Thank you. Any questions or comments? I want to thank staff for putting together these comments. I think they're important to ensure that those who need that added layer of protection for them to be protected. All right.
Move approval.
All right. Second. Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Executive Director, is there anything?
Commissioners, you have the upcoming IAs, while it's still tentative, just giving you a brief preview of it. We will be forwarding to you the annual FICA activity report for your approval and later submission to the legislature. And secondly, as I had mentioned before, a summary of our training initiative through the ARRA funding that recently ended. I wanted to thank Ms. Baker, who has since left the building. I think this is our continuing effort through the good efforts of the chairman to try and bring more diverse presentations to you so that we can relate it back to the work we do, and I think it's important for us to have those opportunities. So to all that were involved, including those in my office that facilitated and our staff that facilitated for being here today, I thank them as well. And lastly, since it is my birthday, I want to take a point of personal privilege and join the commissioners who've already spoken so glowingly of you, Chairman, and thank you on behalf of myself and the rest of the staff for your leadership, but mostly for your kindness and your generosity. And while many references to rocks as nouns have been thrown around this morning, I just want to use have a different grammatical use and just say you rock. Thank you again.
Thank you. With that, I think we're with that, and seeing that there are no other matters, so this is the last time I get to wheel the gavel for a while. I just want to sincerely express my appreciation to staff throughout the agency for your continued hard work and support to all of us during these past 2 years. I have no reservation about what the future holds for this agency. We are in good hands, and we will continue as an agency to do the work that we have been called to do. So with that, I think I will say that we adjourn.
You got lunch?